somehow, some way,
barely
are here. Underground Espionage episode 11, I think. We're like, we've
lost the swing. Totally my fault.
Tara, you know, before we started doing this, I thought you were going to sound better than you just did right now.
You know what? It goes. It comes and it goes. That's kind of how it is.
This is it's crazy.
Like, but if I talk really low, it's
See,
pretty good.
Maybe that's...
But that sounds ridiculous to me. I think, like, I was really excited about doing Bloody Moon because I like to talk like Inga and do the voiceover style. But I don't think that happens. I have two ranges right now. It's this and this one, which
I
is not
I think the lower
better.
Is much more pleasant to listen to.
Do you really?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's been... So.
What if I split the difference and kind of talk like this?
There.
Is this acceptable?
See, now you sound a little more normal.
Okay.
So.
I'm going to bring it down.
As most listeners are aware, Tara lost her voice last week. And when I say lost her voice, it was...
I didn't have
gone.
This. This is the most voice. Okay, I have to keep remembering to bring it down.
Yeah.
This is the most voice that I have had in 6 days, 7 days.
Oh, it'll be a week tomorrow as of
exactly.
this recording.
Yeah, so it was rather shocking. It went out quite abruptly. I started having like a cute little scratchy voice and then just nothing.
Okay.
Like whispering.
I'm shutting down the cute.
It was, well, I think maybe for like 30 minutes it was probably cute.
So we were, you know, we were very excited. You know, we are doing
yes.
Bloody Moon, an absolute favorite here. And it was just decide, you know, let's do a classic.
Hell or high water. We're doing Bloody
Moon. Let's do a classic around here. We were very excited and we had already been a week late. And so, you know, we don't, like we said, we really don't like skipping weeks. It's not something we want to do.
It's due to wild scheduling events, which probably is why I got so
sick.
That,
it just happened. And we're going to do everything we can to not let that happen again. Again, it might, you know, we're not infallible, but it just...
Well, you know, I'm going to get sick again. That's definitely going
to
happen.
Crazy to the point where, as you can hear, you're not really even that much better. And in fact, you got much worse. You got... Because it was just your voice at first.
There wasn't really a
sickness.
Sorry, I
got
to bring it down. I think it might have been like a deep... lung infection that I didn't know that I had, and then
so
it started
even
spreading.
Know.
Potentially, yeah. I have at least bronchitis, possibly pneumonia.
It is crazy, but you are medicated up. We got you a lot of we got
up
you some,
to the gills.
We got you some orange juice. We got you some soup. You know, so we're doing it. We're doing it. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know, like the soup and orange juice regimen. I don't know.
But to me, that sounds right.
Well, look, I mean, I have. I don't want to. Blow my whole vocal wad with inane things that we don't need to talk about because Bloody Moon is very important. But I do have a fun thing that I was reading about during this time because, you know, whenever I have been, you know, hey, you wonderful people, you may know me from a long time back at home time. This may be new for you, but, you know, I'm not new to the being sick rodeo, so it's not going
to
slow me down, right? So
Tara,
I'm out in the world. I'm running around. I'm trying to talk to people.
Yeah, generally it happens multiple times a year to varying degrees, sometimes very serious degrees.
Yes.
But it is just something that you and I have learned to deal with for 25 years.
Sometimes
you've
to
dealt
just
with
hilarious
for
degrees, right?
X amount of years.
So exactly. So, you know, I always love the... People feel bad when they're encountering people who are sick. I'm not contagious because you're not sick and other people aren't sick. It's just this is my immune system. So I do love the constant suggestions of what I should do. And so generally I find when you have no voice whatsoever and you're whispering to people like this and you're like, I'm sorry, I have no voice. And that's all you can do. They'll say something like, have some tea. It's like, oh, fuck, I never thought of that. I should have tea. I should have some tea. And they'll be like, have some tea with honey. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know.
I mean, that does sound like something that would be soothing.
Yeah, but I got problems that go deeper than fucking tea and honey. You know what I mean? Like,
I hear you. Look,
I hear you. Tea and honey ain't gonna do this. I got two doses of steroids and some fucking antibiotics in me. You think tea's gonna put a dent in?
I'm just defending these people who just
I do. They're being so sweet and they want to help, and I appreciate them at the time. And I would never say that to their face because I genuinely do appreciate
I'll only talk
people.
Behind their back on
well,
a podcast.
I mean, look, if you told me to have some tea, I love you, but
I'm
not going to fucking help. At this point, I need something stronger than tea. You know what I mean? But that brings me to this thing. Did I just sound like a bitch when I was saying that? Like, I kind of feel like maybe I came off kind of mean.
It's, you know what? You are
I'm a little grumpier than normal because
you're allowed to.
Not been able to talk for many days, and maybe it's all been pent up in me.
You are allowed to be a little irked.
That's true. Well, I'd just say on behalf of people who lose their voice, we all know about tea. We've tried it. But the thing that I'm really excited about is the Mellified Man. Mike, do you know what the Mellified Man is? An ancient Chinese medicine, specifically referenced in a medical journal in the 16th century. Mike, the Mellified Man.
Ancient Chinese secret? I do not know.
This is something that maybe I should try, right? This is a practice that is described in a journal from the 16th century in China, whereby a person who had lived a long and healthy life, especially into their 80s, makes a decision to donate their body essentially to the future generations and become the mellified person. So what they do is they stop consuming food and they start consuming only honey and bathing in honey. And so they have so much honey that it is said that they excrete honey and they have a sweet smell. And then eventually, due to having only honey and being at the end of their life, they die. And then their body at that point, which is engorged with honey, is then preserved in a coffin of honey for 100 years. And after 100 years, it's cracked open. And then everybody consumes the mellified man as a form of medicine to cure their ailments.
This sounds incredible. I've never heard this. This is great.
Isn't that fantastic? And they have, although it has been documented, they think they have found coffins that have they've found coffins that have contained bodies that are in honey, but they don't know if they were specifically preserved in honey to be a mellified man and gone through this process, or if it was just a random person preserved in honey, because honey has high acidity levels. So it was used as an ancient preservative. That's why, you know, honey, if you notice, doesn't have expiration dates on it, because bacteria doesn't tend to grow in honey. So people would actually take meat and dip it in honey and keep meat preserved in honey for long times. If you think about times before refrigeration, I mean, what do you have for preservation? You have acidity, which is honey, you know, lemons, which and pickling and salt, right? So vinegar, acidity, honey, salt. So taking your meat and preserving it in honey, what a delicious way to do it. So I think that maybe what I'm missing in my regimen, if I'm going to have some hot tea, which thank you for that suggestion, maybe I need a little bit of mellified man dropped into that hot tea to really, like, you know, soothe my system and imbibe me with that ancient health that has been passed through the generations.
More what I was thinking is that, like, you know, I really would like to eat part of you. I would like to, you know, take a bite out of your thigh. I'm just supporting this idea as a way for me to finally get to take a bite out of you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, a part of it is you have to let me sit for 100 years. So you're gonna wait.
I think there's a way we can speed it up.
I don't know if we have to speed it up. But they would frequently take the way that mellified human was supposed to be used was like if you had an open wound, you spread it over it. But that kind of makes sense because it's creating an airtight barrier and it's antimicrobial. So essentially, you're sealing it in. You're sealing that wound with the mellified. So I don't see why it wouldn't work to some extent better than nothing.
How do you spell the word? I'm trying to spell. I'm trying to see the word in my head.
Mellified.
Okay, yeah.
Mel. Like miel is honey in French. The origin is miel, so mellified honey.
Well, I like that. That's great. I've never heard of that, and I do like the idea.
I was excited about
I like
it.
The idea of secreting honey. I think that's nice.
Yeah, of just like reaching that point in your life where you're like, I'm going to donate myself to the greater good and just like sweating honey, like the stickiness and just being engorged by honey. It's kind of like a foie gras goose, you know, where they just feed them until their liver can't process anymore, and then their liver tastes like herbs, and then you.
Well, I'm in. Yeah, it's I'm looking at that thigh right now. Just want to take a big old bite out of it.
Do you want me to start just dousing myself in? I did get that honey body oil for fun.
Hey, look, I think maybe it's kind of like a Easter ham.
It's I'm gonna, an Easter ham. Exactly. That would be totally
slather
like
it on and take a big old
Well, there we go.
Bite.
Okay, all my grumpiness is gone. Now I feel sufficiently guilty for being very grumpy. I've had, you know what though?
I think you're
wonderful people who are here with us. Do you ever just have those moments where you're sick, but you just resent everybody else, or you resent yourself for being sick, or you just kind of like want to be grumpy and full of despair?
This one has been, like we've said, anyone who has been along with the ride with us for years, or just knows us in person, you know, Tara, you getting sick is a thing that happens, and it's just the reality of your life and our life together. This one has been really frustrating for you, you know, and I'm not going to say like, you know, yes, me too. I mean, I'm not hurting physically, but obviously like you being sick, and we go through it together, you know, I'm not equaling my suffering with your suffering. Yeah. I'm not even saying I'm suffering. I'm just saying like, it is not something you enjoy watching someone go through when you feel that you don't have, you can't help, or you don't have a way to fix it. It can be
I appreciate that suffering. Like, it's really hard. Like, it's almost easier to be sick than watch other people suffer.
But this one's,
it's like you just rather do it yourself and have to see it happen.
Had like a specific frustratingness to it, just because
it came out of fucking nowhere.
Because you were just sick like a month ago, and we were both kind of sick a month ago, and so you were, you know, yours lasted more, but it was just like. It felt like we were good until maybe the fall.
Yeah, it felt like we had done our time.
Okay, we're good.
We had done our time, but I think it was actually, I never got over it, and it was just hiding out deep in my lungs, coming back to snatch me down when I did too much.
Yeah.
But there is like this certain amount of cruelty to the like taking away your voice and not being able to speak, because it's like, you know, to some extent, you know, I can pretend that everything's fine. And then when, like, you can't pretend that everything's fine, that's when it's really, like, when you can't trick yourself into thinking everything's okay at a certain amount of time, but when you can't fucking speak, it's just, like,
it's so frustrating.
Utterly miserable.
It's so frustrating. And then, obviously, for us, it's frustrating, you know, to not be able to do the podcast or any of our podcasts. Glad to be back on the train. Hopefully, you know, by next episode, you'll be fully back in order, I feel.
You know, like, the way I see, like, having health problems or being sick, it's just like I don't want to complain, and I can't complain because I have so many other things, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I have gifts that have been given to me. Like, I'm grateful for, like, for you, for my family, for talents, for the other abilities that I've been given in life. So I feel that it would be ungrateful to complain for any of that. Any sickness that I experienced, but this one's just been annoying.
Yeah, you never complain, and you never get down on yourself, or, you know, like you said, hey, maybe there's those few moments here and there, just like any human, you know, has those moments. But it overall, you don't have the attitude of woe is me attitude. No. You know, like we've said, you went through a really harrowing thing that included surgery. And we were still doing podcasts up to it and after it, you know. And
well,
you never once said
blast,
anything,
you know.
And you never once said anything, because your mentality when it comes to this kind of stuff is not ignore it, but it's if you dwell on it, then you're giving it the power. You deal with it. You don't ignore it, but then you don't dwell on it, and you don't want it to stop you from doing the things
that
you want
to do. And I don't want it to define me, you know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not trying to, like, let any of that annoying stuff define who I am, because I think that there's so much more to existence than our suffering. But I mean, suffering is part of it, right?
Yeah.
Because we all suffer, but I like to really look at the moments of our suffering as temporary and things that we're going to push through so that we can get on to the next great thing.
The Spartans, 300 of them. Against a massive army.
Their glorious suffering.
Stood, suffered, died in order to defend Greece. These are the stories that inspire us, define us as who we are. And Tara, I'd like to think another thing that defines you is Tara Connelly, fan of Jess Franco's Bloody Moon.
Absolutely. Fan of Jess Franco.
I mean,
altogether.
Massive Jess Franco fans here.
The voice is warming up. Maybe I just needed to warm it up a little bit, you know?
You know, on our old series, we talked a lot about Jess Franco movies, did many Jess Franco movies. In a lot of ways, I'd like to do them all again.
Yeah.
Just because Jess Franco
hits at different times, in
different
ways.
Some of our all-time favorite movies, Bahia Blanca being one, Cries of Pleasure. It's just movies that really we come back to time and time again and love. And Bloody Moon was the first Jess Franco we ever saw. Well, it was the first Jess Franco we saw definitely together and definitely in the past 10 years.
Because it's more of a slasher style.
Yeah,
so we're kind of, you know, that's how we came to it.
I saw, you know, Vampires, Lesbos, and She Killed in Ecstasy
God,
in the Cut Corner days,
yeah.
As Tara will know. Cut Corner was the great video store I've referenced a few times in Lexington, Kentucky, that was in the basement of a record store, a great record store. And they had, especially...
Oh, it was so fun to go down,
you know,
there.
It was just all the movies I had read about, knew I wanted to see.
Yeah.
They were all there, you know.
Like everything you can't get at Blockbuster. I mean,
right.
Truly, like, just kind of like a dream curation.
Yeah.
Like anything you picked up at Cut Corner was going to be fantastic. And so it was a really great place for us to just go and discover.
Yeah,
things.
Horror movies, all the Lone Wolf and Cub, El Topo, and, you know. You know, a lot, of course, a lot of times at this era, it was, you know, weird bootleg versions of a lot of these things because there weren't official releases. But Bloody Moon was one we watched with our friend Gary Mammal and immediately just fell in love with and returned to probably about once a year. And it, in fact, you know, when we did our episode with Richard and Sean Blackler, Jesus, just discussing horror movies years ago. This was a movie you had picked for your pick of a movie to discuss, but we realized we had actually never done a real full episode about Bloody Moon, and it just felt like the right time. Spring, getting into summer, has that feel. Jess Franco a lot of times has that feel. You know, this one's, while there is a body of water very briefly in it, this is more of a pool, Jess Franco, right?
Yeah.
There's a pool in there, and so it just feels like the right time to watch and discuss Bloody Moon.
Well, I mean, it takes place in Spain, so you have that gorgeous bright sunshine, and it's at an international youth club and boarding school of languages, Mike. I mean, that's
like there's like
very
there's
much like
so many of
international
these
youth clubs and boarding schools of languages. I know
where late teen / early young adult women go to learn another language. And that entails sitting in a classroom in booths with headphones and repeating the Spanish words that are said in your ear. This is...
Me gusta la mantequilla.
Nosotros. Yeah. There's...
Vámonos todos.
Yeah, there is... I know
like
there's,
all of our
there's
Spanish, so we know.
Endless amounts of these schools. And this is just one of them.
This is just one of them. I'm going to ask you to pause it really quick. I'm developing a rash.
And there you go. Pause done.
Just a little rash break. Just a little rash break. I think this is very appropriate for Bloody Moon.
I feel like
somebody would wear this lovely patterned caftan that I'm donned.
You look great. Well, we were just discussing all the millions of schools out there that people go for boarding to learn the language. So this is definitely a standout for Jess Franco in that he didn't do many slashers. You know, he did more
exactly
when he was doing horror stuff, it'd be more Dracula-ish. There's all the Orgoff,
like sensual blood drinking, more zombie.
I said Orgoff, Orloff. I apologize. Orgoff the Mad Mutilator is a great movie,
yeah, it's
as well.
Great too.
But there's a handful that he does, this being one, Faceless a few years later being another. You could maybe say The Sadist in Notre Dame. But this one is just different in a lot of ways, including that there's really no Franco mainstays in the movie.
Yeah, Lena.
No Lena, and which really obviously the main chick in the movie is probably somewhat supposed to fill in for Lena, roughly. So there is that, and there is just the fact that this really is just a straight up early 80s slasher. There's not really, yes, I mean, there's incest themes, but overall,
yeah,
there's
it's
not
a
that
strange slasher.
There's really
but nonetheless.
Not, yeah, there's really not the focus on the psychosexual strangeness. The melancholy really isn't there, like House of Lost Women, Bahia Blanca,
the
Cries
like,
of Pleasure.
And even the kind of like, how do I describe it? Like the, not like standing in place, but the just kind of like halted in time through one
yes.
scene that Jess Franco, like one thing I love about Jess Franco films is that, you know, once the gorgeous scenery has been picked because he had access to so many lovely like estates in Spain out in the Azores and so access to so many beautiful places, like once you're there, it's like you're almost like caught in some fever dream
exactly.
in that place, and so you're just like running around in circles within that
yeah.
one place, reliving some nightmare sequence.
Yeah, this has the school, but it does feel more expansive, mm-hmm. and then they do go outside a few times.
Yeah,
so,
to the discotheque.
Yeah, and whereas a lot, you know, so many Jess Franco movies have these, you know, 3 to 4 people casts a lot of times. There's a lot more people in this movie.
Yes.
While eventually it does sort of whittle down to the main people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the disco club. They go out into the town and then, and there's, you know, so there is a different feel. And even just the way it looks, it just doesn't have that made in a week feel. I mean, this is, don't
yes.
get us wrong. This is obviously very minimal budget. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, the effects are, you know, from, you know, pretty great to pretty questionable. but it just, it really feels like a very singular movie outside of his filmography. But he would do that a lot. There would
yes.
be a lot of those movies that have that feel.
Yeah, he challenged himself and his genre and like what he is. Just like the beauty and the sadness of Bahia Blanca is such a standout.
Yeah.
And so such a different aspect of what
yeah.
he can do. I mean, again, it's got some real Jess Franco moments in it. Don't get me wrong. The poncho in particular, but
yeah.
you know, this certainly is another type of standout. And in terms of like a slasher, it's just so exciting for me in terms of the 1981 European quality
oh,
of it.
Big time.
Like, it's
the clothes
just like,
are just, I mean, this is just Tara.
The
it's
dancing,
just Tara
the
heaven.
Stylization, the like, the handmade signs, that like every bit of it, it doesn't, and it's not like a put on for this film. It really just reminds me of like, you know, everything now is the same, right? Like you
yes.
go somewhere else and it's all
it's
just like
same.
A suburban strip mall.
Everything's
in the, US.
The same.
It's in France, it's
yeah.
in Spain, it's everything.
Yeah.
But this is that time where it wasn't quite the same.
No.
And you'd go somewhere and it would just be kind of just a little bit off. So
yeah.
the plot of this tale is, again, just centered around this language school for girls. Which,
well, I guess there's guys there. Or is there? No, there's guys there. I mean,
no,
I guess, or do they just
the,
work there?
No, that's why there's such a select amount of dudes, and they talk about who the dudes
there.
Are that are the hottest, because we have the tennis instructor.
I don't think I noted that.
Who they all want to bang. Then we have the other teacher who helps run it. And then we have the groundskeeper. And
yeah.
all the girls are fighting over these dudes.
Yeah.
Right? So back to the very important plot.
Yes. Yeah. Apologies, Sarah.
So the very important plot is that there is a gorgeous, I don't know about architecture, Spanish colonial, Spanish mission style in the U.S., but I don't know what it would be called in Spain. A Spain style old-timey house, mission style, let's say, that goes over this language school for girls, and a wealthy grandmother lives there with her 2 grandchildren, or niece and nephew. I guess niece and nephew. Look, I can't even do this. I totally lost train of thought. But old lady lives there with 2 of her relatives. How about this? And she owns the school, and her relatives are pretty sinister and clearly just waiting for her to die so that they can inherit the school. The school has a black cloud over it because 5 years prior to the beginning of this film, there had been a murder. There had been a murder in Cabin 13, and the murder had been committed by one of the relatives of the owner, who had a crazy scarred up face, and he went to a Halloween party, put on a Mickey Mouse mask,
fantastic.
Started banging a chick, and then stabbed her to death with some scissors when his mask fell off, and she found out that he wasn't a hot guy.
Great scene.
So, you know, that's kind of how we open up. Cut to the future when he gets out on good behavior because the psychiatrist says he's good to go.
Played by Jess Franco.
And then his psychosis is over. So now we can bring Gals back to the school. He's good to romp around. And then the murders start happening and the mystery unfurls as to is the scar-faced relative the man who is murdering off these... I almost called them debutantes, young gals, these girls that are endeavoring to learn Spanish, or is there a more sinister plot that has been hatched to gain power?
Tara, I think
over
you summed up
Big Home
Bloody Moon perfectly. And yes, the scarred up man and his sister, seems to be plotting to take over. And then we have the head teacher who... At one point, is this really wild blue kind of sweater that also has some leather and some buttons in very strange places.
Look, I mean, everybody's costume. Like, I took note. The costumer was Rolf Albrecht. Like,
can you please come?
Thank you, and also you got some splaining to do, Rolf.
Yeah.
However, wild choices. And I would have, like, in a Jess Franco film, though, there's one. Nothing is for certain. Nothing is guaranteed. And what's going to happen? Who's going to be in it? Anything that goes on. You know, there might be incest and cannibalism and strange scars and something supernatural and aliens. And there are a wide variety of things
that
happen.
You never really know.
You never really know. But you do know that there will be some wild fashion choices. That is 100% of the time. Some really just fashion choices where you're like, oh, just like down to Vampiros Lesbos. Like, you wouldn't think like... purple chenille like poncho would be the primary garment that a lesbian vampire would don, but it is, and it works, and it's awesome.
It's
so
fantastic.
Again, love it, fantastic. And this just really, really, if anything else, this film is eye candy for questionable fashion decisions. We have so many cowboy boots, we have a lot of mesh shirts and hot pants with cowboy boots. We have shirts with leather and sweater and buttons.
And wild collages. At one point, a girl has a shirt with multiple collages, including like some tits.
A bunch of tits on it. Anyway, we can get into those in more detail. But
I think,
you know,
importantly,
we kind of open the scene by the introduction of Manuela Gonzalez. And Manuela Gonzalez.
Yes. She is the sister of the Scar Man.
And she is... our femme fatale. And another quality that I love about a Jess Franco movie is that when he is introducing his femme fatale, his smoking hot broad, there's always going to be just something just that you can't put your finger on. Like, I mean, she's like, I was like, this is just a classical, sinister, hot, smoking hot femme fatale. She's got thin hair. She has weird makeup. She has strange tits. Questionable nips, and that is Manuela, right?
Yes.
In every way.
Yes.
Just so unusual.
Yes.
So unusual. I love her. I'm here for it. And she does strike you as evil, though. Like, she does her part well. She seems like she's she really would set her auntie on fire to inherit the school, and she does.
She sure does. But Tara, I think Manuela is incredible. The woman who plays the grandma or the matriarch is incredible. But let's get down to brass tacks here, because Bloody Moon is really a movie to showcase these young ladies, including the one and only Inga, who came to this school to learn Spanish. Tara, let's talk about the chicks.
Let's talk about personality. I mean... like, I think that's what draws me into this over and over and over again. Again, much like Manuela, she has that kind of villainous, evil, willing to, you know, stab anybody for a buck type of attitude. But then you get down to the girls of the boarding school, and they have that playful schoolgirl, I can't wait to go on a date, I want to find some boys, let's go out and have some fun and dance all night type of attitudes. And they're just dripping with personality. And yes, of course, like, you can't discuss this without discussing Inga. And I think Inga is, as somebody would say now, a pick me girl. Inga really just wants attention. Inga is inexperienced but wants to prove that she's experienced.
Which is highlighted in one of the greatest scenes in any early 80s slasher, where she is faking that she's having sex and making, jumping on the bed and moaning and saying all these things so that her friends can hear.
It's not Ramon. Is it Ramon?
It seems like it should be.
Hold on. I know.
Did you write the name down?
Of course I wrote it down, but I haven't.
Oh, shoot. But yeah, it is. Tear my clothes off. Oh, and then, of course, the dubbing is so great. So it's obviously not their voice, and the way it just comes off is.
Is it Alvaro? I can't remember.
It's so, so good. And
oh, it's Ralph.
There it is.
She goes, oh, how can you just laugh at me? It's not my fault that Ralph couldn't come.
Dude.
Like because she had to fake it because everybody was going to her cabin to listen to her have sex with Ralph because she said she was going to get there.
Yeah,
with
she. Yeah.
But again, she is one of those like all talk, no action. Everybody just keeps like gossiping about how Inga's probably a virgin and she's never been with a guy, but she's really trying so hard. Like, she's super eager. Her voiceover is just unbelievable. And the actress's face is just so like sweet and charming. She has a little blonde bob.
She's my number one out of all the chicks. Like, I think she's the cutest. And I mean, I think the main chick is probably
the most full on,
traditionally beautiful. But to me, it's all about Inga. And Inga, I would never stand you up. And if you wanted your friends to hear, we could just as loud as you want. And I'll tell you
what, she's got something to prove and you're going to help her prove
Is
that what you're saying, sir?
Exactly. And, Inga, it's not that we'd sleep together, because we'd be up all night.
You are so ridiculous. All right. Well, there you go, Inga. He's just throwing it out there. Well, you know what? I don't think it's going to be hard for her to hear what you just said, because they did chop her head off in the logging
her
scene.
Death scene. Now, and again, I don't think we really need to be going through this in chronological order. Okay. I'm jumping around.
Yeah.
So her death scene is the quintessential death scene in the movie as well, because after this scene that she does the faking sex, it just cuts to her in a car and with no explanation and nothing. And she's saying, like, I can't even see your face. Why don't you take your mask off? This is so exciting. I'm down for anything you want. But then there's a point where you see the guy's face.
Tie me up a little harder.
Yeah, there's a point where you see the guy's face multiple times. Anyway.
Yeah.
He's bringing her to a stone-cutting mill up a mountain. Yeah, and he starts tying her down. She's like, just tie me down. Like, yeah, you can. Ooh, little. Oh, I'm up for anything. I'll try anything.
As they say, suffering is pleasure. I've always wanted to make it with a Spaniard. They're so hot-blooded.
Yeah, it's so incredible. And she just won't stop talking. That's the thing, is like, she's the kind of girl that won't stop talking, so you do just want to, like,
absolute chatterbox.
Like, cover her mouth and just go
to
town.
Does it kind of remind you of me in a normal day? That's why it's so hard to not have a voice.
Maybe that's why, maybe that's my attraction to Inga.
Thank you, everyone, for being here with us on Underground Espionage. I just talked in a way that sounded like I was going to go into an ad, but I'm not. I'm just going to say that I feel like we're all over the place on this film, and I just want to reassure you. I want to take this moment at like a halftime break to say that we can't spoil this film. We can tell you every single thing that happens, and you won't be prepared for it, and the delivery will surprise you every time. So I want to go ahead and say that. Two, I do want to disclaimer myself by saying that in order to do this, I have taken Robitussin, so I am a little less coherent but a little more loosey-goosey.
I like it.
I feel both loosey and goosey.
I like you this way. Well, he does take her to a stone-cutting mill and proceeds to buzzsaw her head right off. And this is, it's a very gory scene, and it's great.
Like, I would say that this is one of them, like, this kill, like, we get a stabbing, we get a scissor stab as our initial kill, right? When Scarface Man takes off his Mickey Mouse mask and stabs her multiple times. Then we get stabbing through the back with the scissors coming out the nip. That scene is great with Ava getting stabbed. And then we do have this buzzsaw beheading.
It's crazy.
But I think the craziest, most shocking part is that you know, through this, like a child witnesses two people going into through, a logging mill to have a tryst.
Yes, and he's, a little he's kid sees a very funny looking kid.
Looking little kid. Yeah. You know, he's curious. He's like 7 or 8 and he wants to go see what these people are up to. So he starts kind of spying on it and he sees that although she's tied up, they're not going to bang. He's going to saw her in half. So he runs up and turns the mill off. But, you know, the killer just reaches right back up, turns it off, beheads Inga. So the little kid runs away. So what's he do? He hops in his car. And he goes and runs the kid down.
Runs
you
the kid over.
You expect that to happen. But again, that's what I'm saying about a Jess Franco film. Like in most films, yeah. It would be like this little kid gets away, go tell somebody. Then everybody starts searching for the killer. We do, you know, something of that nature. No. Not in this film. The kid doesn't get far. And the guy just blasts him off the road with his car. And that's the type of thing that you get in Jess Franco. Anything goes.
I love it. You also get, Tara, a disco club on the premises of this school, and what a club it is.
Yeah, it's quite okay. Well, you know, I guess I don't really need notes to like discuss this, but I mean, yeah, it's quite a disco club. What type of music do you think they play at the disco club,
Mike? Well, they certainly play a song called Shake Your Baby.
Oh yes.
And I know it's called that because pretty much the lyrics seem to be shake your baby, shake your baby.
Oh, that's right. And then, okay. Now, just to refresh myself, we have... Oh, and Miguel. Miguel is Scarface, man. His name is Miguel. Duh. Okay, I knew that. Yeah, I'm going to come back to it because we're talking about this discotheque, which is just like... You get to a cool discotheque that all the gals are going to because they have a night off. And, you know, we have a few people roller skating, right?
They are definitely roller skating.
Some people are swing dancing. We definitely have the song going, shake your baby, shake your baby, over and over and over again. There are beanbag chairs on the ground. But somehow, though, Mike, it all plays out as normal because, like, well, this is in Spain.
It just feels like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that might happen.
Yeah, sure, why not?
This might happen to people roller skating. Do you have dreams that you're roller skating ever? Mm. Like, I have a lot of dreams. I still have dreams, even though I haven't roller skated in, it's probably been a decade now.
It's definitely been longer than a decade.
I knew I was waiting for you to say how long it's been, but we have been in the last 15 years because we've been to a roller rink together.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, thank you, Captain Chronograph. Now, I do have dreams, though, since it's been low these many years since I've roller skated, that I'm going somewhere and I got roller skates on and I can't take them off and I got to try to do normal things while I have roller skates on, like go up and down stairs and try to shop or do something.
You know,
nature.
I was telling somebody that I had a Frosty from Wendy's for the first time in over 3 decades. And I'm like, am I exaggerating? No, I would
you
say that it was actually... accurate over 3 decades would actually be accurate, which is kind of insane.
And
spoiler, amazing.
I tasted this Frosty, but I will say that it might be like the second or third time in my life I've tasted a Frosty because as a child I was allergic to chocolate.
You know, I've always said that your parents did that as
they didn't do it. They
so
were
that
tests
you didn't,
for it.
No, I Tara. They did
it's
it
not their
to
fault
keep,
if they
it's,
were
it's
tricked.
A smart thing to do.
Oh, my God.
To keep kids off chocolate.
Do you
no,
know
I'm
how many rashes
smart,
I get?
It's a smart thing to
do. Do you
know
how many rashes I get? Do you think, like, I used to, if I had chocolate, get all that? I'm just saying, like, chocolate allergies are real. And how much do I like chocolate? I don't eat that much chocolate. You're so absurd. But I didn't eat chocolate.
Someone the other day told me that they were allergic to peanuts. I said, just eat it. Just keep eating peanut butter. You'll be fine. And then he goes, why don't you? I go, keep eating peanut butter and just like work through it and then you'll be fine. He goes, why don't you shoot yourself with small bullets so you become immune to large bullets?
That's right. I love it. I know who that was. I think that's a great idea, Mike. That's a great idea. We'll start trying this program. We'll start with BBs.
Look, people come to Underground Espionage for the advice that I give. Okay?
I know. You know allergies are real of anybody.
I know that they're real. I'm just... Hey, look, you said you're loopy. I'm trying to match your energy.
Well, all right. Well, here we go. So, yes. So, I had had a Frosty before, and I... probably twice.
Fucking delicious.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, but it didn't stop me from getting... I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. I would get a fucking Blizzard instead. You know what I mean?
It's no, I'm sorry. To me, the fucking delicious the was is, I put the cap on about, that and then we're moving on.
I know, but
on.
Think about all the blizzards though. But think about this. Like, what is your blizzard that you get if you have to get something in it that's not a fucking chocolate?
Peanut butter.
Yeah, so like Reese's Pieces and peanut butter. That's my only option. Like, Reese's Pieces were like my go-to because that was the only thing other than like if you could try to get delicious. Like a strawberry shortcake one or something.
Oh, I would definitely do that.
You could get the cookie and the strawberry, but like everybody else was going like Oreo, Snickers, Blizzard, like all of those things, but I couldn't do that. So.
Yeah, I'm. Hey, Tara, I'm here and I'm on your side.
Deep breath.
Hey, who's more on your side than me?
Yeah.
Is there anyone more on your side than me?
No. Robitussin.
Well.
Me, you, and Robitussin, baby. Jess Franco. We got this. Lena. Candy Coster. We're all here together. These wonderful people here with us in Underground Espionage. Now, I kind of thought we would go through the notes in order.
Well, what do you got? What do you got?
Let me see what else I got. The one great thing is that the main kind of like guy that everybody's gaga over, who's the director of the school, and he's maybe fucking Manuela, maybe fucking some other teachers, maybe some girls. He is like a balding, weird-looking guy.
Look, you know, I
kind of like a cross-eyed, balding hairline,
doesn't
leather
seem to
snappy
me,
shirt guy.
Yeah, doesn't seem to me to be the most desirable man on earth, but he has certainly played that way.
He certainly has played that way, and I like that. I like the realism of Jess Franco, of just like, you know, when you are in a limited group of people,
it's like here's who we got.
This is our hot guy. Yeah. He's the hottest guy
we
got.
He's wearing a blue sweater with leather and buttons on.
He wears a white sport coat over black
clothes. His teaching method is to walk around a room that everyone is in booths with headphones on, with Spanish going into their ear, and they're repeating
and say
it.
La pajarita,
nosotros, vamos, estamos.
Oh my goodness,
están, está. This is literally from the movie.
No, it's actually what's happening. And this is fantastic. And then, I do like the girls are having a cool pool scene, and you also know it's in Europe because they're in a cool pool, everybody topless and just being cool about
it. You get to see.
So it's a bunch of teachers hanging around a bunch of topless chicks, and they're wearing sarongs with pineapples. And I thought it would be a fun thing in my notes. That's why I started talking about this again. Does everybody know about upside down pineapples?
Isn't where did we read about it? Isn't it like a swingers thing?
Yeah, I was reading. I just yeah. Well, thank you, Mike. It is a swingers thing. So.
And no one get any funny ideas, FYI.
Oh, so I this is
unless
why.
You're Inga, but not if you're a dude, and especially
well, I don't
think not
anybody
if
anybody has any ideas. No one else would put up with what I,
and
this
especially
voice
not
right
if
now.
You're the teacher.
They're all like, no thanks, guys. Like we're good. They're like, you can have 50,000 upside down pineapples, and we're not gonna come a calling at you guys.
If you're Inga, we're turning it upside down.
So one of the girls is wearing a sarong with an upside down pineapple, and that's what made me laugh about it because it was funny. We are going to this like pool thing we like to go to, and I almost got this skirt that had a pineapple, but it had an upside down one. I don't want people to get the wrong idea because I read this article about cruise ships banning the pineapple altogether because putting an upside down pineapple on your door means you're open to swinging relationships. And so when there would be these retiree cruises, then there would be these parties with such an upside down pineapple culture that it became kind of a menace on the cruise ship. So many cruise lines have banned the use of pineapple, upside down or otherwise.
They didn't have enough penicillin on board.
You aren't allowed to put a pineapple on your door of any type. Because it, yeah, I guess, but I would imagine that causes a lot of drama to have too many upside down pineapples and knocking in the night and all of these things. So they wanted their family cruise, all these retirees running amok. Also retirement communities, I hear, have banned the upside down pineapple because of the mayhem that it invokes. I digress. Speaking of mayhem, this film is mayhem. I didn't really.
That was a great
track.
It was great. You were. I was. You teed it up for yourself.
Let's talk about Ava.
She's
going
great.
To the disco, staying
She's
out
great.
Late, drinking a bunch of beer,
grabbing those beers.
Decides to go out on a boat at night, but she needs to borrow a pullover.
So great.
Yeah. And then one thing we learned about the Spanish school is that no bras allowed.
it's never, seeming
never
that
a
way.
Single bra.
Wait, is Ava the one who gets the knife through the back through her tits?
Through her nips. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not the one who gets the beer. It's the other chick who gets the beer who gets killed with the, like, I don't even know what they are. They get put around her, but they're not, no, because it's some sort of like whole, it goes around her
oh,
neck.
Oh, yeah. That's like one of those, I don't know what that is.
It's great.
Yeah, it looks like a, like an Inquisitor torture device with like spikes, and it goes around your neck to hold it.
It's so great.
Wild animals with it, maybe logs. I don't know. It's great, but they do say for programs in Spanish, nothing beats lessons in bed.
Hey, that's right.
Oh, yeah, and then we get the cool scene with Medusa the snake.
Medusa? Oh, and she keeps going like, where's Medusa? Medusa. They say Medusa like 100 times.
Yeah, Medusa the venomous snake is released from
and they really do chop evil Manuela's the head off the snake.
And they do chop that. I mean, you know what? It's like a European film in the early 80s. They're going to probably,
hey.
They don't worry about killing animals. They did it, bugs. I would say birds. Reptiles and birds are certainly on the table to be killed.
They're like, they're
generally
going.
Not mammals, but sometimes like a rabbit might get killed. But certainly snakes, they have no, they just don't even
they're
see
like,
that as an issue.
Gone.
So yeah, let's see here. What else? What other parts do we want to discuss? What have we missed in this film when we talk about the?
I mean, I think the
my brain is scrambled.
You went scrambled. Things got scrambled. It's okay. We knew this was going to be an odd episode.
So, like, you know, we've discussed the glory of the killings. We've discussed the glory of the outfits. If you want to see, like, a perfect Grace Jones sweatshirt over some, like, flesh-toned yellow jaundice leggings, you get that. If you want to see, like, the apex final girl top be something with a weird lion coin and unintelligible writing that was... never meant to signify anything in general. You got that going for you. If you want buttons to go sideways and not be buttons but be snaps, you got that going for you. I mean, truly everything is just like a feast for the eyes and the imagination.
I love the music too. That kind of guitar riff that keeps playing like it plays throughout a lot of the movie. I love that.
But truly, like, the film ends back in the grand house. And I wish that my brain would understand and know the word of that style of home, this white stucco classic home in Spain. But I'm not going to pull it out right now. And we're not going to edit. And I'm not going to pause so that we can find out. So everybody just kind of imagine.
I'm putting this one
imagine
right up.
Something. And that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's big
imagine
and fancy.
Imagine something.
Imagine a big place that none of us could afford. It's that, right? There's a fountain. There's servants. Need I say more? So, did it turn out that we have burned Auntie but preserved her body and we're still rolling her around the estate
maybe
to convince everybody that
honey.
She's alive? Did it turn out that Manuela has been low-key seducing her brother and potentially banging him when she needs to and withholding the bang sessions when she needs to?
Definitely some incest vibes going.
Yeah, never. And again, Jess Franco ain't gonna shy away from incest. I'll tell you that. All angles of incest, he's down. And then he's a man of the 70s in that way, right? Does it also turn out that Manuela has seduced gardeners? That Manuela has seduced potentially other teachers? And Manuela is using these men to do her bidding and wreak havoc and murder women so that she can gain control of the estate of her burned up to a crisp auntie.
100%.
What an evil, evil lady. But what I like about her is that she's conniving. She's willing to share. She's willing to make a deal. The frenzied apex of this film of running and stabbing and accusations and men with blue eyes and trying to figure out exactly who killed who and exactly what happened is truly a joy. And if you are under the weather and you have taken beyond the recommended dosage of Robitussin, I would recommend watching this film. Just run straight towards it because it's going to make absolute sense in that state. Now, if you are well rested, stone cold sober, sipping on a Waterloo, potentially you might say, I still have questions.
But that's okay. I think it can be enjoyed all these ways.
I don't understand how Manuela was going to have these guys kill people and then gain more out of it. Like, wouldn't she harm the school by killing all of the girls in it?
The more you watch this movie, the more holes you can just plug right through it.
And how is she going to say that the grandmother burned up suddenly if she has the burned, crisp, decaying body that's been running around? Did she preserve it with honey?
We don't
Maybe watch, she dipped her in honey.
We here at Underground Espionage don't watch movies like Bloody Moon for these types of answers and clarity. We'll watch a movie like Heat when we want that, which we did watch recently, and it is, of course, one of the greatest. We watched that first time in a long time. Well, we love those types of movies. Yeah. We're going to watch that.
Things that have
but when we
like
want,
linear plots.
We love it.
With like legitimate devices and
on.
A reveal, and then everything kind of cohesively comes
great
together.
Great acting.
And you just feel kind of like satisfied,
Bring
and
it
might be
love
like
it.
Bummed at the end or excited at the end, but somehow like you just
emotional,
you have resolution,
you think about
right?
It. Love it. Love these movies. Love but you things. Know what? Sometimes you need a movie like Bloody Moon.
And then some, yeah, I mean, you need a movie that just ends with a kind of incesty, burned up, decayed, auntie, chainsaw, stabbing, shooting, frenzied girl school angle, you know?
You absolutely do. Girl school, my baby, broke all the rules. Bloody Moon, that was great. Tara, I'm so proud of you. I think you really pulled it through that Tucson haze, through this sickness. Let's get back to resting your voice so that next episode we're just full 100%.
But you know what, Mike, I see your point, and I'm just saying that I kind of think the more I've talked, the kind of better it sounds. So maybe I just need to talk through it.
Inga style.
I need to talk through it Inga style. Like, look, I'm sure that anybody listening, do you relate to me in this way? It's like sometimes you might be a little shy, so you come off as like a kind of reserved, quiet person. But then once you get to know somebody, it's like you can't stop yourself from talking and you never shut up. Like, I do. I am kind of like that.
Yeah.
Like, I really, like, Mike, when we're together, I am not ever quiet. And sometimes you have to be like, calm down.
There's literally times at the end of the night in bed,
no talkie,
where I have to say, Tara,
I talk myself to sleep.
Stop talking.
So it is.
You're like, Mike, you asked me a question about something you're watching, and
Mike,
I don't think it's a
Mike,
question that requires a response.
Mike.
Like, oh, isn't that crazy what she did? And it's like, I don't. You like,
Mike.
It's like,
Mike.
You were at, you like, and then you're like, Mike, and I'm like, Tara, enough.
And it's like, you know that you're like this and you don't want to be like this. You want to turn it off. You're like, in my head, if I had the choice, I would turn that off and I would have an interior monologue. But then it's not the way it works. There aren't switches that I can just turn off.
I don't want you any other way, Tara. Everything like this just makes you. Luckily, this medium popped up called the podcast that is recording talking. So
good.
It fit you perfectly.
Yeah.
And
we can talk about Mellified Man. We can talk about Jess Franco. We can talk about Upside Down Pineapples. We can talk about
chocolate.
We can
allergies.
rate nipples that we see on all these films. And that's what they're there for. Like,
yes.
I'm just saying, like, if we can't talk about the beautiful, wonderful variety of nipple shapes in this world, then why are they even there? Why
yes.
do they put them on screen? They're all wonderful, and I love them all.
Absolutely. Well, Tara,
Inga's notwithstanding.
Hey, love you, Inga. Love you, Tara. Love you, listeners of Underground Espionage. We will, fingers crossed, be back next week. We did not picked out anything what we're going to watch because we just, you know, we were just trying to get this one out. So we will obviously.
Just trying to, we've been trying so hard.
We've been trying so hard
to do this.
We will be back next week, hopefully with something great and week in and week out. Voice.
Yeah. Well,
voice.
And I'll have a voice and I'll.
Voice.
And I will have like, a little bit less medicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's jacked up on steroids.
We'll just see. All right, listeners, thank you so much. We will talk to you as soon as we talk to you.